Hello and welcome to the weekly Marine Times, This Island Nation podcast. Tom McSweeney here. In this month's edition of the Marine Times, the editorial questioned why government, through the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine, has been prepared to give assistance to the farming community for lost income and damage caused by weather. But no comparative compensatory measures have been considered for fishermen, also hit severely by weather impacts. The fishing industry is not challenging the right of the government to assist farmers, but it can be envious of what they are given when those who are also food providers, but whose harvest is from the turbulent sea, are not similarly considered. It is an unfair discrimination. Those whose life is on the sea can suffer, and in many ways. And this is well reflected in history and in the current edition of my radio programme, This Island Nation, which records tragic disasters on the east coast of Ireland, which occurred within days of each other and not too far away from each other either. Less than a month before the First World War ended, the SS Dundalk was sunk by a German submarine on the night of October 14, 1918. She went down in about 3 minutes. 20 lives were lost, 19 men and one woman. There were 12 survivors. The story of the sinking told in a documentary by our colleagues on Dundalk FM.
A chill October wind swept across the moonlit deck of the SS Dundalk as she steamed steadily for home, oblivious to the torpedo which raced towards her with unerring accuracy. The torpedo smashed into the doomed vessel amidships, violently splitting the ship asunder as the savage explosion erupted into the night sky, illuminating with cruel clarity the hellishness of the brutal scene. With grim military efficiency, the German U-boat commander surveyed the torpedo's mangled aftermath of angry flames and twisted metal from the conning tower of his surfaced sub, ignoring the screams of the injured survivors who fought to stay alive. Content with his bloody work, the U-boat captain ordered his sub to dive, stealing a final glance at the remains of the tenacious Irish ship which had evaded him for the very last time.
The SS Dundalk was the flagship of the Dundalk and Newry Steam Packet Company. It traded to Liverpool and had been attacked previously in December of the year before 1917, when 52 shells were fired at her by a German submarine. She survived, led by her master, Captain Hugh O'Neill.
Captain O'Neill called for full steam ahead, and with a zigzagging manoeuvre, the canny Irishman brought his ship into the safety zone off the Isle of Man, escaping his German aggressor. The U-boat had fired over 50 shells, but only one was on target, and it had utterly demolished one of the lifeboats on deck. The SS Dundalk had been fitted with a deck gun and bravely returned fire, but the shots fell short of the submarine. It was certainly due largely to Captain O'Neill's tenacity and courage that the Dundalk survived to sail another day. So skillful was his seamanship that only the one enemy shell managed to land on target. In recognition of Captain O'Neill's valiant efforts, both he, his officers and his crew received testimonials and reward for preventing the death of their passengers and the destruction of their ship.
On the night of 14th of October, when the SS Dundalk was not so lucky, that happened, and Charlie McCarthy, who's chairman of the Dundalk Commemoration Committee, recalled it on the Dundalk FM documentary, and how a flu epidemic at the time meant that some of the scheduled crew could not sail on the fateful voyage, and they were replaced by others.
She was 794 tons, 72 metres long, and she was built for the Dundalk and Uri Steam Packet Company Limited of Dundalk and Uri. That's where she traded from most of her life, from Dundalk to Liverpool. Mostly livestock and passengers. She would carry small amounts of cargo. All the Dundalk and Uri ships carried livestock. They carried the cattle and sheep and stuff to Birkenhead, and then they would go over to Liverpool with the cargo and the passengers' cargo. That was the standard.
Mm. And what was the return trip? What would it be taken back from the UK?
Foodstuffs mostly and small amounts of coal and that was mainly what it was. Dundalk was also the hub of the railway system for the whole north-east of Ireland. And most of the coal for the railway system came in through Dundalk at that time. Right. The coal went as far as Ballyshannon and into Monaghan, Cavan and South Armagh from Dundalk.
She was mostly crewed by Dundalk people.
Yeah, all her crew, more or less, were Dundalk or Newry, but mostly Dundalk.
At that time, there was a lot of illness. I think, was it the flu that was going about at that time that knocked out a few of the crew?
Yeah, there were terrible flus in those days. There was an epidemic at that time, and it had hit the crew in a big way because a lot of them, I think, were affected by it, and that happened. A few of the crew members, I think, that they were switched with.
That's right. I think there was three crew members in the night. It was their first time.
The tragedy of the SS Dundalk, and this month's edition of the Marine Times has the full story of the sinking with photographs and personal stories. A memorial is being unveiled 100 years after the sinking on Sunday morning, October 14, at the Navy Bank Riverside Walk in Dundalk. An ecumenical service follows at 3 p.m. at St. Patrick's Cathedral in the town. Her sinking is less well known than that of the mailboat Leinster 4 days before, having left Dunlera, and to be remembered on a National Remembrance Day at Dunlera, also 100 years later on October the 10th, as author and historian Philip Lacaine outlines. It was the biggest ever loss of life on the Irish Sea.
That's right, Tom, and it was also the greatest ever loss of life on an Irish-owned ship.
And obviously one that's being remembered in Dunlera now as the 100th centenary arrives.
That's right. And it's also being remembered in a number of places overseas, in the Isle of Man, in Warrington, in Doncaster, in Nottingham and in Florida.
And the government has made it a National Remembrance Day, so obviously it's been taken as a very major occasion.
It certainly is. The state have been working very hard. The commemorations unit of the Department of Culture, Heritage and the Gaeltacht have been working on plans for this for the best part of a year, and they are producing an official commemorative booklet.
And also remembering, I'm told, the German submarine crew who were lost a short time after they had sunk the Leinster.
That's right. It's important that everybody be remembered in this centenary. There are no winners in war, and the Germans suffered just as badly as the Allies.
You've just finished a book that's being published also this month, Philip, Women and Children, the story of the women and children who were lost aboard, and there are some very personal and emotional stories in it.
There are. The first ever Wren member of the Women's Royal Naval Service to be lost on active service died in the sinking. 21-year-old Josephine Carr from Cork. She was one of three Wrens who were aboard, and the other two survived. There was a family from Limerick. The Goulds, Catherine Gould, was lost along with five of her children, which makes it the biggest, the family who suffered most in the sinking.
122 women and 27 children amongst the casualties?
That's right. There were nurses, civilian nurses who were going to England, and then there were military nurses who were going to Britain, and in at least one case to France. Nurse Violet Barrett had been nursing wounded German prisoners on the Western Front, was at home on leave, was returning to duty when she was last. And then there were many civilian casualties, and a number of families lost members.
Author and historian Philip Le Cain. And the RMS Leinster Remembrance Ceremony is on Wednesday, the 10th of October at Dunlera. As we heard at the outset of the programme, surveys have recorded huge numbers of whales, dolphins and porpoises in Irish waters, and there are several reasons why they are important, as Dr. Simon Berrow, Chief Scientific Officer for the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group, explains.
Why should we be interested or concerned with whales and dolphins? Because they are magnificent, inspiring creatures that inhabit a world we really know very little about. Because they inspire artists, musicians, poets and philosophers. Because they fill us with awe and make us happy. Well, yes, all of these reasons. But we should also be interested because they are indicators of the health of our oceans. Whales and dolphins, like all marine mammals, are top predators. They are at the top of the food chain, and thus they reflect the quality of all beneath them. They require all the trophic levels to be functioning well enough to provide sufficient resources for them to survive and ideally thrive. Healthy populations require healthy food, not just of sufficient quantity, but good quality. We are privileged in Ireland to have a diverse community of whales and dolphins. Some 26 species have been recorded to date, with Bowhead and Blainville's beaked whale recently added to the species list. This reflects the large marine area within the Irish EEZ and the diversity of marine habitats it contains. Recent surveys in Ireland have recorded thousands of whales and tens, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dolphins and porpoises. Impressive numbers. So clearly, we must have a very healthy marine ecosystem. However, we don't know if these populations are increasing or decreasing. They may be abundant now, but were they more abundant in the past? Have some species increased at the expense of others, which were depleted through whaling or incidental capture in fishing nets? Without doubt, the greatest human impact on whales and dolphins is overfishing. The removal of millions of tons of potential prey and predators to a point where these prey populations have crashed. However, many populations of large whales, such as humpback, grey and southern right whales, are recovering since commercial whaling was banned and are returning to their former haunts. To sustain these increasing whale populations, it is critically important to maintain healthy fish stocks, especially those small pelagic species with high lipid content, which, through their schooling behaviour, concentrate energy into highly desirable whale meals. Here, we have much in common with our coastal communities, especially the inshore fishing fleet, which themselves have felt close to extinction in recent decades. Initiatives which seek to manage inshore fish stocks to healthy levels, such as local weekly quotas for small vessels, vessel restrictions based on length or power, management zones, marine conservation and protected areas, or no-take zones around spawning beds, can all contribute to locally managed small-scale fisheries, which maintain stocks at high levels, sufficient for all predators, be them human, marine mammal, seabird or shark. There is no doubt that a rapid expansion of our marine protected zones, incorporating a range of management options relevant to local objectives and the environment, with coastal communities from fishing, marine tourism and angling interests playing key roles. These should be at the heart of a sustainable future. This is slowly happening from the bottom up. Local coastal communities taking back ownership of their local marine resources. This is the only way we can ensure there are enough marine resources for all constituents, including an increasing whale population. This is Dr. Simon Berrow of the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group for this island nation.
And Dr. Berrow will be presenting his reflection on whales and dolphins as sentinel species at the very last Connemara Sea Week in Letterfrack, County Galway, from the 27th to the 29th of October. For more details, go to the Connemara Sea Week website, and Connemara, in the context of the website, is spelt C-O-N-A-M-A-R-A, on the SeaWeek website. John Leach, Chief Executive of the National Organisation Irish Water Safety, reports now on the European Junior Lifesaving Championships. They were held at the University of Limerick Sports Campus and on Kilkee Beach.
Well, we made some lifesaving sport history by successfully hosting these championships with teams competing from all around Europe. The director of the competition was Claire McGrath, who is the chair of the Sports Commission in Irish Water Safety. Logistically, this competition is quite challenging, and the competitors spent 2 days battling it out for medals in the various disciplines. There were 11 events, heats for all these events in the mornings, and then finals each afternoon for the medals. Ireland got off to a strong start, winning the simulated emergency rescue competition, and over the 2 days acquitted themselves very well, winning more medals than ever before in a pool European Championships. Following their efforts in the pool, they then moved the competition to Kilkee for the 3 days of beach and surf events. There were another 11 events for the competition. These are my favourite events, as a great carnival atmosphere is created on the beach by all the competitors, officials and spectators. This is the first time Ireland has hosted this competition, and considerable effort has been completed by our many volunteers from all around the country to ensure that the competition satisfied the demanding standards of the International Lifesaving Federation. This is the world body that sets the standards and makes the rules for our competitions. The Irish team relished in the Atlantic surf and consequently did very well on day two, where four of our competitors took to the winners of the podium. It was great to see these young athletes give it their all to perform for their country and be so successful. And so ended 5 days of close competition, where the home advantage saw us win more medals than in any other international competition in our history. The Irish team won medals in 14 of the 22 events, which is a record for us. Congratulations and well done to all the volunteers who arranged the competitions, the equipment, laying the courses, manning the safety boats, and of course the accommodation. So until next month, enjoy your aquatic activities and always wear a life jacket on or near the water, and use your influence to further reduce the number of drownings on our island nation.
Wise words of advice there from John Leach, Chief Executive of Irish Water Safety, and congratulations to the Junior Lifesavers on their success. Next, Justin Marr rounds up other maritime news.
The historic Island, Ireland's last schooner and trading catch, is back in Limerick after a restoration in West Cork. The restoration project took several years to complete. It was led by Limerick man Gary McMahon, who said he was delighted that the island was back on the Shannon. A ship has cost the Revenue Commissioners €410,000 at Dublin Port. For berthage of the MV Shingle, which was seized in June 2014 at Drogheda Port with an illegal cargo of 32 million cigarettes and 4,000 kilos of tobacco. She was moved to Dublin Port but could not be sold for 3 years until legal proceedings completed. But the ship is in poor condition and contains asbestos. So far, Revenue have not been able to get rid of it. And finally, something unusual is happening in Antarctica, a type of cosmic ray. That's a high-energy particle, seems to have blasted its way through space into Earth and back out again in Antarctica. It's been detected by the American NASA Space Agency, but scientists are unsure exactly what it is or what is causing it. Strange things are happening.
Indeed they are, and all over the world, and particularly on maritime waters. And another piece of news for Irish anglers, they're now allowed to keep one bass a day which they catch. This follows advice from the International Council for the Exploration of the Sea, that recreational angling does not impact on bass stocks to the degree previously believed. The permission will remain in place until the end of the year. Commercial fishing of bass remains prohibited in Irish waters. Now, will you help to watch the sea swallows? Brian Burke of Birdwatch Ireland's conservation team asks that you would help.
For the third year in a row, Birdwatch Ireland is seeking records of tern flocks around the Irish coast. Terns are sometimes referred to as sea swallows, as their white colour and preference for marine habitats has them somewhat resemble a seagull, but their forked tail, pointed wings and flight are all similar to a swallow. We have 5 breeding species of terns in Ireland: the common tern, Arctic tern, roseate tern, sandwich tern and little tern, each of which are mostly white with a black cap and pointed bill. Variations in size, bill colour, wing pattern, shape of the cap and call help tell them apart, though it can be tricky at this time of year as they start to molt into winter plumage. Many of their summer breeding sites are protected under Irish and European law, and the locations of their colonies are well known. At the end of the breeding season, starting in late July, they depart from their breeding colonies and gather along the coast in large numbers as they feed and rest in preparation for migration to the west coast of Africa and beyond. At present, we don't know much about what sites they rely on around the coast at this time of year. To address this, we're building a picture based on sightings from the general public and from dedicated volunteer counters who also take part in our Irish Wetland Bird Survey each winter. Last year, we received records from 11 counties around the Irish coast, from a total of 47 different sites. Sandwich terns are our largest species of tern, with the most commonly recorded, being present at 39 of 47 sites. Common terns were recorded at 15 sites, Arctic terns at 13, and the rare roseate tern was seen at 7 locations. The largest tern roost in Ireland is at Sandymount in South Dublin Bay. The site is monitored by our Dublin Bay Birds project team and hosted over 6,000 terns in August this year. Elsewhere, counts of over 1,000 terns are recorded annually in Louth, Meath and Wexford, and other sites elsewhere hold tens or hundreds of terns at different stages during August and September. Many terns that nested in the UK and Europe will fly west after the nesting season and feed in the Irish Sea, roosting along our coast before heading south with their Irish counterparts. So, when you see a tern flock at this time of year in Ireland, it could be made up of birds from a number of different countries. Terns are coming and going from roosts on a daily basis, so numbers at a given location can vary significantly from day to day. This is another reason we need the public's help to monitor them, and every record is of value. Birdwatch Ireland is collating records of tern flocks around the Irish coast in August and September to build up a detailed picture of what sites are important to these species for resting and building energy before their migration, so that they can be adequately monitored and protected into the future. We're seeking records from members of the public, whether they see a big flock or small flock, and even if they aren't fully sure what tern species are present. Often it can be easiest to see and count tern flocks an hour or two before sunset and on a rising or high tide, but again, we'll gladly accept any records. If you see a flock, try and count them as accurately as you can, and if possible, try to identify the species present. If this is difficult, an estimate is still useful. You can get in touch with us via our Facebook and Twitter pages or by contacting Brian Burke at bburke@birdwatchireland.ie.
And Brian is a member of the Birdwatch Ireland conservation team. Seabirds are amazing species and the distances they travel, just fascinating. And do contact him again. It's bburke@birdwatchireland.ie. And so our maritime voyage on the airwaves comes to a close on Community Radio for this edition. This Island Nation is produced at CRY 104 FM at Yall on the East Cork coastline. Production and technical supervision by Justin Marr. Your contact is most welcome. Email to thisislandnation@gmail.com or phone or text to 0872 555 197. That's email thisislandnation@gmail.com, phone or text to 0872 555 197, and the weekly This Island Nation blog is on our Facebook page. Until our next programme, the usual wish of fair sailing.
Thank you.